9 o'clock hour here on 790 The Ticket. Alex Dono, Rashad Butler with you. Texter writes in at 67974. Will the Miami Dolphins win another game this season? I think they will.
I think so, too.
I mean, they still have the Bengals and the Jets for a second time.
Correct. The Giants.
Yes. And also, you can't ignore the fact that for the last month or so, they've been getting a little bit better every
day. They have.
And it's why, like, and I've got at least one stat to back this up that, you know, usually you wouldn't look at a 1-7 team and say, hey, I think the coaching staff is doing a really nice job. But I think you can say that with the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
And one big piece of evidence I can back that up with is, because I'm sure you can verify this point on the counterpoint would be, you know, when you've got a really poor coaching staff, you're probably very undisciplined and you're probably getting penalized a ton.
Correct.
Right?
Absolutely.
Miami Dolphins are the least penalized team in the NFL.
They are.
And that's very surprising for a 1-7 team. And that tells me that them being, you know, 6 games below .500, 8 games into the year, has a lot more to do with the talent on the field and not the coaches, because mm-hmm. You could say the coaches are doing a hell of a job when you've got a team that's lost that many games, that is the least penalized team, only 45 penalties so far this season, fewest penalty yards as well, I think 300 and some, but 45 penalties, least penalized team in the NFL midway through the season. That to me says these coaches are doing a really good job despite the results not being there on the field.
It's amazing the buy-in that has taken place over the past month, because we started off the season not knowing if there was going to be buy-in. And then that, I guess, skepticism increased, I want to say maybe right after the first 4 games when Josh Rosen came in and Josh Rosen starting to struggle. And then when Flores went back to Ryan Fitzpatrick, a lot of people were saying, uh-oh, here we go. You know, another, I wouldn't say quarterback controversy, but the coach couldn't make up his mind. And then the trades happened. And I'm not going to lie, I was somewhat skeptic of Brian Flores. But one thing about me, I've always given credit when credit is due. If I'm one person that messes up, I'll say, listen, I messed up. And I must admit, I got it wrong, because I was one person on that side of the fence that was questioning Brian Flores. But right now, I can't question him, because clearly guys are buying in. And the reason guys are buying in, like you just mentioned, fewest penalties in the NFL, so that takes no talent wall that a lot of people thought was a little silly, a little childish, a little high schoolish. It's working. And then after that, we see a team that is just getting better. And just to see what they're doing both offensively and defensively with guys, like, let's keep it real. I mean, this roster, for the most part, is made up of guys. If they were on contenders, at best, they'll be backups or special team players.
Yep.
Or maybe not even in the league. But for Brian Flores to take a bunch of cast-offs or, you know, undrafted free agents and really turn them into competent players that are actually competing on a week-to-week basis and having a chance to not only be in games but win games late, I mean, you have to tip your hat and you have to give Brian Flores a standing ovation. You have to.
Yeah,
and to me, anybody that wants to question coaching and say that this team is badly coached, just look at the statistics from the first 4 weeks to now, and to me, that's not bad coaching, because if it was bad coaching, the players would have quit a long time ago on Brian Flores.
Yeah, and let me focus on some offensive guys, and we can give Chad O'Shea credit as well.
Absolutely.
The fact that Devontae Parker now looks like a competent player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the numbers that undrafted Preston Williams was putting up, unfortunately, before his injury.
Monster numbers.
And
undrafted. Crazy.
And Mike Gesicki is actually looking like a competent offensive player now.
Correct.
So they're doing some really nice things there.
Mark Walton, a guy that had a lot of trouble in Cincinnati. And the guy that a lot
of – it sucks for my fantasy team that he's now suspended.
Yeah, and the crazy part about it, a guy that, like myself, I thought was going to be out of the league, having three arrests in the span of what, like not even 3 or 4 months.
Yep.
So, I mean, the job that this coaching staff has done, like you said, I don't want to forget Chad O'Shea, not even Patrick Graham, the defensive coordinator. It's amazing. And all those other coaches on the coaching staff, just that job – it's just, again, I give them a standing ovation, because where the Dolphins are now compared to where they were week 1 against Baltimore, it's night and day.
I think this team ends up winning three, maybe even four games. And I know that some Dolphin fans who were all in with, oh, let's get the worst record guarantee, the first draft pick, will not be happy to hear me say I think they get three or four wins. But you have to look at the positive side of that, because if they continue to trend upwards and play a little bit better every week, and if you can say Flores and his staff can get three or four wins out of this group, that's a big accomplishment.
I agree.
So at the end of the day, if you're Stephen Ross and you're Chris Greer, even if you're the owner and the GM of a 3-13 or a 4-12 team, you're getting some really good sleep heading into the offseason, heading into the draft, knowing that we think we found the right coach to be, you know, the leader to get us back to being a playoff caliber team. Because one of the things I was really concerned about heading into this year, because we all know how, even before the season, how barren this roster was. And then by the time the season started, they kept trading away more players, right? So it's only the roster has only gotten worse since, you know, the end of the preseason. And one of my big concerns was, and, you know, halfway through the season, the jury is still out on this, I guess, but I'm seeing some positive signs. But one of my big concerns was with how bad the roster is, and they're going to have a really poor win-loss record, how do you even evaluate Brian Flores? But I think Brian Flores, you see, you know, him and his staff, you can see the coaching is doing a lot of the right things.
Correct.
Even if the talent is poor. And I think Stephen Ross, if you come away with three or four wins from this group, you feel really good about your coaching situation. And also with this draft, it's not looking the way we thought it was going to look a couple months ago, because you're seeing different quarterbacks enter the mix. I mean, who would have predicted a couple months ago that Joe Burrow might end up being the best quarterback?
Absolutely.
In this draft? I'm not saying he is, but he might be.
Correct.
Right? We're going to know a lot more after this coming Saturday's clash between Alabama and LSU. And then depending on who gets the first pick or the second pick, you could see Chase Young coming off the board, either first or second overall. So even if the Dolphins were to wind up with, let's say, the third overall pick, you might still be in a position to draft Burrow or Tua. So you're not in that terrible of a spot, not to mention the fact that you have three picks in the first round of the draft. So even if you don't have the absolute worst record and the number one overall pick, you're still going to have a chance, and you still have to select the right players. So
correct.
This is not
bingo.
This is not a free pass for Chris Greer. You still have to get this right. But I think you're going to be in position to take care of many of your problems in the draft with 13 draft picks and three first-round picks. Even if you don't get the number one overall pick, I think the situation will work itself out.
You know what? I agree 100% because at the end of the day, like you said, I personally think that this Dolphins team at best will probably win two more games. I say 3-13. I could see four, but I think with me, I'm more comfortable.
I mean, I think the only way four happens is if you like sneak in a win against a team you're not supposed to beat.
Exactly.
I don't know what week they face New England for the second time, but if they just
last game
check
of the
out,
season.
So last game of the season, they've already clinched the first round bye, and they're resting people. Like maybe you can bleep house a win in that game.
But I think this Miami Dolphins team, it's evident, and I think we can all bank on it that this team will be drafting at least in the top five when it's all said and done. Now, whether it's, you know, number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, in due time, everything will play itself out. But depending on which teams are in front of the Miami Dolphins, again, you don't know. I mean, they may pass on a guy like Tua for a guy like Chase Young, or they may say, hey, you know what? We like Joe Burrow instead of Tua Tagovailoa, so we're going to draft Joe Burrow, and then the next team may draft Chase Young, and then I'm pretty sure there'll be some other guys that may leapfrog after having a good combine or a great Senior Bowl. Again, we don't know because, again, these are all things that are going to take place after the season. I think right now fans are just looking at what's going on in season, and fans are forgetting about we have the Senior Bowl, we have the combine, we have pro days, and trust me, out of those three events, there's always one or two guys that will find themselves in the top five, just testing great and just working out great, you know, for their pro day and so forth.
All right, let's keep the people updated on what's going on. It's time for some headlines.
This is WAXYAM South Miami and WSFSFM HD2 Miramar, a radio.com sports station.
Miami Heat will try and bounce back from their 20-point loss at altitude in Denver. I don't know how anybody wins in Denver. Like, seriously, I don't know how anybody when it's such a big home court advantage to practice and live in that altitude. I don't know how anybody ever wins in that arena. The Heat got beat up in Denver last night, but they'll play the Suns in Phoenix tomorrow, 9 p.m. You can hear that game right here on 790 The Ticket. Zaslow will start the pregame coverage at 8 p.m. tomorrow. Florida Panthers are back tomorrow. They're on home ice at the BB&T Center hosting the Washington Capitals. That'll be tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. You can listen to that game on our sister station, 560 The Joe, with Doug Plagans and Bill Lindsay on the call. Miami Hurricanes hoops team, who lost to Louisville last night, they will host FAU Friday night. That'll be a 7 o'clock start time on 560 The Joe. And the Miami Hurricanes football team, who beat FSU this past weekend, they'll look for a third straight win. They will host Louisville on Saturday. Kickoff is set for 3:30 from Hard Rock Stadium. That'll be on 560 The Joe as well, with pregame starting at 11:30. So hopefully we continue to get the positive vibes from the Canes football team, because it's one of the more knee-jerk fan bases of any team that I follow, where everyone's feeling great after a really dominant win on the road in Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. And God forbid the team looks really bad at home against Louisville. You're going to have a lot of the same people who were praising Miami are just going to be livid if Miami doesn't take care of business this week.
I agree, but I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say I don't think that's going to occur this weekend. I do believe that this team is finally hitting their stride, and I credit, not only the coaching staff, but I credit the players having the self-initiative to get better. Because when I look at this team, I think every position group has gotten better since the beginning of the season. And one position group in general is the offensive line, on offense at least.
Yeah.
And now I think Jaren is starting to understand what it takes to actually be a quarterback and to be a competent quarterback and a good quarterback in college football. And then defensively, I mean, wow, that defensive line has just looked night and day since we saw them early in the season compared to now. And even the secondary, which, you know, was a lot of, I guess, talk for skepticism and so many question marks. And that secondary, I'm sad to see Bubba Bolden get hurt and get injured for the season.
Oh, I know, that sucked, especially the way he got injured.
Exactly, because he was coming on strong. But to me, when I look at this team, there's just been so many improvements from early in the season to now. And I credit a lot of that, not only to the players, but to the coaches as well.
We were talking Manny Diaz earlier, and I got a text from a former producer of mine who was listening. He actually works for ESPN now.
Oh, nice.
So, I mean, there's nothing to do in, what city is that in Connecticut?
Bristol.
There's nothing to do in Bristol, Connecticut, so he was listening to us online.
Uh-huh.
And Tito Benach, I don't know if you knew him, but he has a talent for turning every sports topic into a food topic.
Okay.
Big foodie.
I love it.
Big foodie. And he writes to me, hearing us talk about Manny Diaz, and the conversation we were having, it was either the first hour or the second hour, was that as we got a text from somebody who's probably not a Miami fan, who was saying, it was an FSU fan who said, you know, you guys are all high on Manny Diaz after a win over Florida State, when 2 weeks ago every Canes fan was trying to fire this guy, which I don't think is true. I think only the mentally ill, irrational Canes fan you see on Twitter, a few people were saying, oh, fire Diaz, 7 games in the season. They did not represent the whole of the fan base.
Agreed.
But, you know, Tito texted me, is Manny Diaz a 7-layer cheese dip? Sure, in the beginning, it seems like a lot of nothing, but the deeper you go, the better it gets.
I like that.
I mean, how about
that? I like that.
So hopefully we're only in, like, the second or third layer of Manny Diaz, and there's even better stuff to come.
To me, if this team can finish off 8-4 and win their bowl game, whoever they play, and finish off 9-4, I think that will be a huge momentum boost going into next season, knowing that a lot of these guys, a lot of these kids will be coming back next season.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, it's a young team.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and it's why, like, you know, it's still not guaranteed they got to win at least one more game. Mm-hmm. But bowl eligibility is huge, because you get extra practices. You get 10, depending on how many you choose to actually run, you can have, like, 12 to 15 extra practices, which every coach wants that. Like, I used to be one of those people years ago that thought, oh, if you're going to end up in a sad bowl game, like, you have to go to El Paso or Shreveport, I'd actually rather not even play in a bowl game. I used to think that way, but after talking to coaches about it and hearing how adamant they are about mm-hmm. how important the extra practices are.
Yeah.
You get essentially like an extra month to run practices. They sold me on it that even if no Canes fan wants to know, oh, my team is going to Boise or they're going to Shreveport to play a bowl game, just think about how important that is for player development for next year, especially when you have a young team like Miami.
No, I agree. So to me, if Miami can finish off 8-4, I think that will be huge. It will be huge for the program in a number of factors. I think it will be huge for the program in the fact that this team is so, I mean, again, so damn young. And I think you only have, that I can think of, what, about three seniors that are contributing this year as far as Michael Pinckney, Shaquille Quarterman, and Jimmy Murphy. Now, I'm pretty sure I may be leaving out a few more, but I'm just thinking of the ones that are actually playing and contributing on a game game-to-game basis. Excuse me. So if this team can, again, run the table, win their bowl game, and finish off 9-4, that would be huge. And at the same time, it will be huge for recruiting as well, too.
And I just hope we don't play Wisconsin in another bowl game. I mean, I'm tired of those guys. They kick our asses every time.
Well, with our D-line, hey, I'm ready for it this year.
Oh, by the way, Rick and Davey, who's one of my favorite chronic texters.
Oh, yeah, I love Rick.
He texted in, Rick and Davey's 2020 top five mock draft. Would you like to hear? And he even has the team selecting.
Okay.
So he's got the Bengals at number one,
uh-huh.
drafting Joe Burrow.
Okay.
He's got the Jets at number two, drafting Jerry Jeudy. That seems like number two overall.
Ooh.
But you know what? If anybody would make a misstep like that, it'd probably be the Jets. He's got the Dolphins at number three, drafting Tua.
Okay.
He's got the Redskins at number four, drafting Andre Thomas, an offensive tackle. And the Falcons at number five, drafting Chase Young.
Okay.
I couldn't see Chase Young falling that far, though, to five.
Well, to me, it would either – well, I like the team. To me, it would either have to be the New York Jets or the Atlanta Falcons. I could see those two teams being a destination for Chase Young.
Yeah.
But I don't see the Cincinnati Bengals, and I don't see the Miami Dolphins again. And I balk whenever fans mention draft Chase Young. Like, come on, seriously? Like,
we need Chase Young.
Like,
the Jets need
come
Chase
on.
Young.
So – I believe that if Chase Young, if he was to be selected, it is going to be either the New York Jets or the Atlanta Falcons to me. I don't think the Bengals or the Dolphins are going to draft Chase Young. No shot.
And, you know, for the Dolphins, like I saw Armando Salguero wrote a column about this and people are talking. I think even Larry Bluestein, who's on the competition. They're not our competition, but he's on 560 The Joe right now. He and I have talked about this before, that he thinks that the Dolphins, if they're in position, shouldn't overthink it. They should draft Chase Young. See, I think that is overthinking it.
Yes,
I disagree with him because, you know, you don't go through this roster dismantling or tanking. You don't do that to draft a defensive end. You do that to draft a quarterback.
And you
don't tank for a pass rusher.
And not even that. You have to understand that Chase Young – yes, he's a great pass rusher and a great edge rusher, but he's just that. And just understand what Brian Flores, what he's trying to do and where he came from. And when I think of an edge rusher in Brian Flores' system, an elite edge rusher, I think of a guy like Kyle Van Noy, who's in New England, who can do everything, rush the passer, play the run, drop in coverage. And to me right now, Chase Young just hasn't he doesn't have those skills. So to me, I could see a team like the Jets and like the Falcons drafting Chase Young to be strictly a pass rusher. But to me, the Dolphins drafting Chase Young to be strictly a pass rusher, I don't think that's going to fly in Brian Flores and Patrick Graham's defensive system.
Look at it this way. For a decade and a half, the Miami Dolphins had a Hall of Fame pass rusher in Jason Taylor.
Uh-huh.
But how high could Jason Taylor elevate the Dolphins when they didn't have a franchise quarterback?
That's true.
It's case in point. Like
very true.
You had
yes.
one of the best pass rushers of all time, but most of his career was played when the Dolphins didn't have a great or even good quarterback for a lot of those years.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jason Taylor, who's one of the best ever, could only take that team so far. Now, maybe people could say, oh, no, Dono, I think Chase Young will be even better than Jason Taylor
no.
was. He won't be, first of all.
I don't think
all.
So. Yeah, I don't think
and
that.
And you can't
I don't think so.
And even if you feel that way now, you can't gamble that because.
Correct.
And listen, nobody knew that Jason Taylor coming out of Akron would be as great as he was. But the odds of somebody being the next Jason Taylor are very, very slim. And Jason Taylor could only take that team so far when you had mediocre to bad quarterback play. Don't overthink it with the pass rusher. You're starved for a quarterback. Take a quarterback. Dono and Rashad with you till 10 o'clock here on 790 The Ticket. I love how much salt the Philadelphia 76ers fans throw at Jimmy Butler. And it's like radio guys, too. It's a very spiteful town, Philly. Mm-hmm. You know, they booed Santa Claus. They have the most foul-mouthed fans. Like, I've been to a couple games over the years where the Eagles were in town to play the Dolphins. I've never been to Philadelphia, but I've been to a couple Eagles-Dolphins games at Hard Rock Stadium, and you know, a team travels very well, or you know, there are a lot of Eagles fans, I guess, living in the city, and people come down from Philly. And I was once cursed out by a 70-year-old woman just for no reason, like just for existing, because I was wearing a Dolphins T-shirt and a Dolphins hat. She was an Eagles fan, just cursed me out for no reason. Like, it's Philadelphia for you.
The funniest thing I remember about Philly was 2 years ago, before the parade, where they put grease on the poles downtown because they wouldn't climb.
Yeah, and they still found a way. Like, people still ended up at the top of those poles.
And that's when I knew. I said, listen, fans in Philly are just one of a kind. They are very special. And when I say special, for any Philly fan out there listening, I mean special in a great way.
You don't mean like short bus special?
No, I don't. I just mean special in a great way. Because when you have a city greasing the poles.
That's so great.
I mean, like, that. Listen, that just lets you know they know the mayhem that's about to take place.
I mean, like, celebrations in Miami are all about love. We're banging pots and pans. Correct. We're hugging people.
Uh-huh.
Philadelphia, they riot. Like in places like Philadelphia and Boston, like, I can remember. And Boston, they've won so many damn championships there. I sometimes mix up the parade footage.
Uh-huh.
So this was either after a Red Sox title or a Bruins title. You remember a piece of viral video years ago? This was from a Boston parade. This was from a victory celebration. Like, it's not like your city is burning down. You just won a championship. And a video went viral of someone curb stomping another person.
Oh, my God.
And these were like American History X style, like curb stomping someone.
Well, I remember.
Weird way to celebrate.
I remember it, but I still can't remember. That sounds crazy. Which Boston team won a championship? It may have been the Patriots when at the parade you had two Boston fans fist fighting. I'm like, listen, I'm like, hold on.
I think that was the same parade that I'm thinking
of. Yeah, I'm like, hold on. I'm like, your team are champions of the world. Like, why are you fighting each other? If anything, fight another fan. Like, if you see another fan from another fan base, fight them at least.
Yeah.
But why are you fighting amongst each other when you guys just literally won the chip? Like, you guys are the champions of the world. Yeah, it was quite hilarious.
So in Philadelphia, they give Jimmy Butler a really hard time for, you know, leaving a contending team.
Uh-huh.
Because, why does he need to leave Philly just to go be the man for an irrelevant team like Miami? This is their words, not mine.
Okay.
Like, they're giving Jimmy Butler a really hard time for choosing the Heat over the 76ers. And, I mean, first of all, you know, I know we're only seven games into the season, but I think we're already seeing signs that Miami could be a team that can sneak up on a lot of people in the East.
Absolutely.
That maybe people weren't giving enough credit to the way this team was constructed by Pat Riley and the way this team can be developed by Eric Spoelstra. Now, it helps that you've got a couple of rookies who have been fantastic to start the year. I hope that Tyler Herro and Kendrick Nunn can sustain the way that they're playing, but I think Miami is going to end up being a team that no one wants to face in the playoffs. Like, they're going to sneak up on teams in the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. So I think they should have given Jimmy Butler a little bit more credit to say maybe he knows what he's doing to go to a team like Miami. And Jimmy also, in a recent interview, hinted that there were other things at play in Philly. Stuff just didn't work out. Nobody knows what really went on in Philly, and we're going to leave it that way, he told Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports. But it was a great opportunity for me, talking about coming to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Just go with your gut. You're not dumb. All of that will come out whenever it's time. Right now, it's not the time. So he's strongly hinting that there were some toxic issues behind the scenes in Philadelphia. And thankfully, that's the kind of stuff that rarely surrounds the Miami Heat. Like, rarely. Mm-hmm. Like, every now and then you've had a mopey Hassan Whiteside or Gerald Green is on Flocka, losing his mind in a lobby of an apartment building somewhere, allegedly. But you rarely ever hear stories, about a toxic locker room with the Miami Heat, thankfully.
I think with Jimmy, just wanted to be around a group of guys that, for one, weren't prima donnas. I think he felt that way in Minnesota with Andrew Wiggins and Carl Anthony Towns. And then I think he felt that way in Philly with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Now, I think in Philly, I think the relationship may have been a little bit better between him and those other two players compared to the relationship that I don't ever think he really had in Minnesota with Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. But I get the sense that Jimmy came to Miami primarily not only off the strength of D-Wade as advertisement, but just that he understands that this Heat culture that, you know, a lot of people talk about, he knew that he wasn't going to be surrounded by players that were prima donnas, that he knew he was going to be surrounded by players that are all about hard work and really want to go out and scrap on a night in and night out basis.
Yeah, just think about preseason when it came out that Jimmy Butler starts his workouts at 3:30 in the morning, and then other players, Myers Leonard tweeted about it, like other guys would show up to these 3:30 a.m. workouts. It's like that doesn't happen in a lot of places where guys would follow his lead. Like a lot of teams, you hear Jimmy Butler is working out at 3:30 in the morning, you're thinking this guy's a lunatic. Like I'm not going to do he's working out at 3. I'm going to sleep until noon. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. But you have that hard-working culture, and it happens because there aren't any divas on this Miami Heat team right now. There have been in the recent past. One of them is now in Portland. Uh-huh. But there are not many divas, any divas on this Miami Heat team right now. So when they see a leader like Jimmy Butler setting the example of working so hard, the extra mile, which is the way Pat Riley always wants it, the way Eric Spoelstra always wants it, that sort of work ethic in a place like this will be infectious, where in other places, guys will just look at you and kind of laugh or ignore you when you do something like that.
I agree. My only worry with the Miami Heat moving forward, because I had them picked to make the playoffs this year, and a lot of people don't agree with this, and they didn't at the time. My place was always 6, at best 5. Okay. Now, some people may say 4, and I heard some people say 3. I even heard Brandon Tobin say number 1 in the East. It is what it is. But I just think the problem they are going to run in later in the season and in the playoffs, if they can't happen to find a second, I guess, consistent scorer next to Jimmy, then I think they're going to have a hard time when they face teams in the playoffs like a Milwaukee that, you know, have talented players, or a Philadelphia. They're going to have a hard time trying to sustain scoring over the course of a 7-game series.
I mean, do you think Tobin was, like, really serious when he proclaimed?
Absolutely. I think he was.
You don't think that was shtick?
Listen, Tobin is the number one Miami Heat homer. And I think Zaslow's number 2.
But, like, even Zaslow would probably have them pegged for, like, a
3
seed.
I think Zaslow and Amber are around 3.
Okay. But, I mean, number 1 seed, though, it seems ridiculous.
It does, but I mean, I can't put it past Tobin. I can't.
He said 67-15.
Yeah, he did.
That was the predicted record?
67-15. He did.
Jeez.
On air. Live. He said it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
would be really happy if they win 50 games.
If they win 50 games, they're the top 4 seed.
I agree.
You're right.
And again, I said that they'll make the playoffs. So, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say they're not going to make the playoffs.
And I'm not even a fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
And I gave them the 4 seed.
Are you a Knicks fan? I know you're a New York. Okay. Oh, yeah. I just want to make sure because I know you're a New York guy, but I don't know.
He's a Knickerbocker.
Well.
I'm not jumping on the Brooklyn Nets even in the end thing.
Good fan, man. I love it. You're a good fan.
No, but Rashad was right. He said 6-8. And I'm like, the team is a little bit better than I think people might want to give them credit for.
I think 4 seed.
Okay.
And I'm a Heat homer, but I'm going 4 seed.
But I think, Zach and I looked it up. To be a 4 seed in the East last year, you had to have at least 50 games.
Okay.
So the Heat
wins. I think they can get that.
Okay.
But you know, you're right. You had to win 50 games, but one of those guys left that was a key contributor to that 50 win team.
That is true.
You know, Kawhi went to Toronto.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and Kyrie's in Brooklyn. So in the Nets, and I believe the Celtics were a 50 win team.
They were. They were.
So I think the Heat think the Heat might be better than Boston right now.
I like it.
Okay.
I'm feeling the love right now. And I'm feeling the love for Heat basketball.
They might be equal to Toronto.
Yeah.
Or
but
better.
My guy Siakam's looking great.
I'll take Jimmy over Siakam.
I would too.
Well, the thing about the Heat, I think the Heat, with them, if they can continue to play team basketball, and here's the and here's the key thing. To me, the shots have to fall. Like last night, the shots didn't fall. And usually when shots don't fall, that's when you need like at least one or two players to kind of pick up the load. And unfortunately, Jimmy couldn't be that guy. And that's the only thing I worry about in a 7-game series. If you have like a 2 or 3 game slump, you know, who's going to be that guy next to Jimmy that's going to be able to kind of pick up the extra load? Because let's be honest, like every game isn't going to look like how it looked against the Rockets where everyone, you know, well, no one can miss. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's my only worry about the Heat moving further into the season and into the playoffs.
I mean, we've already seen the flip side of that because, you know, no one could make a shot yesterday. So you've already seen that you're going to have some nights, especially on the road, when your bench and your supporting cast just can't step up the way that they can at home. I mean, role players always play better at home in the NBA, and it's why you still need to see more seasoning and more development on this roster, because if you're going to make a deep playoff run, you've got to win some big road games, right?
Absolutely.
You've got to win some big road games against tough teams, so you have to see that your bench can step up somewhat consistently on the road in big moments.
And, I agree.
You know, we still need to see more of that from this team. 67974 is how you reach us on the text line. We take you up till 10 o'clock tonight. Alex Dono and Rashad Butler with you. New batch of college football playoff rankings drop, plus the thing that triggers me most about early November. Next.
Style and grace, allow me to lace these lyrical dishes in your bushes. Who rock grooves and make moves with all the mommies? The back of the club, sipping my wet is where you find me.
So, all right, I'm gonna do our guy Vlad a solid here.
Okay.
So, here's what we need, and hopefully, this person happens to be listening at this very moment. We need the Tool of the Week winner from yesterday on the Zaz and Amber show to call our studios right now. What is it? 786-360-0790. And, okay, important note. If you're just calling in pretending to be the Tool of the Week winner, Vlad is going to know that you're faking it.
Yeah, I know his first name. And I know where he's calling from.
Right, so we got the caller ID.
Right.
So you're going to know if it's someone just seeing opportunity. I won Tool of the Week.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
How do I get my prize? So you're going to know if it's the right person, but you need the winner, if they happen to be listening, to call in so you can get what their Tool of the Week was.
Right. They tell me what the Tool of the Week, because I know what was the winning Tool of the Week.
Gotcha.
And that's why I will know. But I need your information. I lost some of your information.
Which I think might make you the Tool of the Week.
Yeah, it might make me the new Tool of the Week right now.
I like that one, Dono.
You know, I'm a ratchet.
Switch it up.
Oh, man.
I like that
one. All right, so if you happen to be, and we'll know if it's the wrong person, we'll know if it's really you or not. If you happen to be listening, the person who won Tool of the Week yesterday on the Zaz and Amber show, call our studio, 786-360-0790, and inform Vlad what the Tool of the Week was. I hope we can fix this. I hope we can solve this problem.
Same here. I'll do.
One of my favorite things is anytime we bring up the Miami Heat, we get these just amazingly positive Miami Heat texts.
Okay.
Now, and they've earned it, but the Heat fan is the most positive fan base in town. Like, rarely do I ever see negative Miami Heat texts, right? Like, you've got Dolphin fans who are ready to jump off bridges. You've got, you know, Miami Hurricanes fans who are upset. Marlins fans, do they even exist anymore? So here are some of the texts we got when talking Heat. Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn will be the best backcourt in the league, taking over for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. We got that. Jimmy Buckets coming to Miami brought back Heat culture and titles in the near future. And these are from different phone numbers, by the way. This is not the same person texting. These are all different numbers. Godfather Riley has reloaded with great young talent, surrounded Butler and Bam, Winslow, Nunn, Hero, DJJ, and Silva with a very veteran bench. Heat Nation will fight anybody that calls out our beloved Tobin, they write. These are all different numbers.
Shaking
these
my
are
head.
Five text messages. Oh, and here's another one. Different. I swear to you, all of these are different phone numbers. Lock in Heat versus Lakers in the NBA
oh
Finals.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
oh
I'm
my
so
God.
Amazed because usually.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I've been doing radio with
sure
a text
that
line.
Sure, was Stephen A. Smith?
I don't know. He's got burner phones.
Like, that's his ultimate dream. Lakers versus Heat.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, he loves South Beach and he loves L.A. So
okay.
Yeah, he just wants to go to all the games.
Yeah, he wants to go to those two beautiful places.
I get you.
No, but it's amazing because I've been doing talk radio with a text line for long enough that usually when you get texts that are kind of similar like that, you look and it's all the same phone number.
Correct.
These are six different phone numbers. Like these are all different people. And God bless it because the Heat fan is so positive. All different people texting in. Heat Nation is done with this waiter's clown, Texter writes, and needs to bounce him out of Miami. I don't know, man. I'm all for second chances. And here's the thing about Dion Waiters. The report is they're more than happy to field trade calls for him, but they're not getting any decent offers.
Okay.
But they're not getting any decent offers for Dion.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're stuck with the guy and he is meeting the, you know, the physical requirements, the body fat conditioning requirements, I am okay with giving him a second chance. Now, if that second chance fails and it has to become a third chance or a fourth chance, keep him off, you know, the active roster, do what you need to do. But I am okay with giving Dion, if you would even consider this a second chance, some might consider this a third chance at this point, but I am fine giving Dion Waiters another chance.
The thing with Dion is I think Dion can really help this team because I think Dion is one player outside of Jimmy that can create his own shot and really hit his own shot consistently. I like what Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero have been doing, but again, they're rookies, so I can't put full stock in rookies. Now, I hope they're able to keep it up, but last night, I mean, both rookies didn't look that good. Now, I know some may say that's only one game.
Yeah, it's one game.
Yeah, and again, that's fair.
Best backcourt since the Splash Brothers. Come on.
And again, that's fair, but I know what Dion can do, and we all saw what Dion can do when Dion is healthy and when Dion is fully engaged. And I'm like you. If you are not getting any trade offers, I'm all for giving Dion a second chance, and I feel as if Dion should be included in this rotation. Now, I think Dion has to understand that at this point in time, you may not be a starter, in this rotation.
You get 10, 12 minutes. You have to live with it.
But at the same time, I mean, I think in a night like last night, the Heat probably could have used Dion Waiters because, again, who knows? I mean, to me, no one else's shot was really falling consistently. And to not see James Jones or Dion Waiters on the court at all, I mean, to me was just kind of like really didn't make any sense.
Something to shift gears here before we wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
Something that bothers me this time of year. It's first week of November. This is the time of year where you stroll through like certain department stores or certain coffee shops and they're playing Christmas music.
Okay.
Like, what are you doing?
I agree.
I mean, okay. I know that. It seems like every year we try to start the holiday season a little bit earlier because commercialization, you want to sell your pumpkin spice lattes, you want people to start doing their Christmas shopping insanely early. I do not want to hear any Christmas carols until the day after Thanksgiving. That's the earliest.
I'm
that is
you.
The earliest.
Listen, I am with you 100%. I'm the same exact way. Like, I've heard stories of people, I guess once November hit, they put up their Christmas. I'm like, hold on, what? You put up your Christmas tree once November hit? Like, no. Like,
God.
Listen, you don't put up your Christmas tree until the day after Thanksgiving. Black Friday is when you do all the, you know, Christmas tree and the Christmas house decorations. But, like, November 1st? No. That makes no sense at all to me.
Thanksgiving is the benchmark you have to clear before you
Bingo.
Start thinking about Christmas. Like, you can't be focusing on Christmas when Thanksgiving is not arrived. It makes no sense.
I agree.
I don't know at what point people started focusing on Christmas the day after Halloween. No, it's the day after Thanksgiving. And I'm not even a huge Thanksgiving guy because I think turkey is incredibly overrated.
Well, you know what's crazy? In Toronto, they celebrate Thanksgiving mid-October.
Yeah, that's right. It was I can remember because a few weeks ago we had a random afternoon Florida Panthers game on a Monday. And it's like, why would they play like a 1 p.m. game on a Monday? Canadian Thanksgiving.
Correct.
And in case you're wondering, hockey is very popular in Canada. I just want people to know that. Mm-hmm. And so they play hockey games all throughout the day the way we play football games all throughout the day on Thanksgiving. That's how they do it in Canada. But, man, if I hear one more Christmas carol first week in November, I'm going to lose my mind because I'm not ready. I'm not ready to turn the page yet.
I agree.
And celebrate that. Now, I may end up taking my kid to Santa's Enchanted Forest at some point in November, but that's a different thing. It's a little bit of a different thing. Oh, man, I love Texas writes in it. After being stuck with the trash Dolphins, Canes, Marlins, we deserve this legit Heat squad.
I get it. They do. Listen, I will not argue that fact at all. I get it.
The Heat have earned it, man. They've been.
They have.
Even the years they've missed the playoffs, they have been a consistently well-run organization. Well, that'll do it for us. Want to thank everybody who listened in, texted in, everyone who made this show a part of your evening. And man, I don't think we ever got the Tool of the Week winner to call. So maybe if you're still listening, if you won Tool of the Week yesterday, call up our guy Vlad and inform him on what your Tool of the Week was. For Rashad Butler, I'm Alex Dono. Rashad, you'll be back on tomorrow night, right?
Correct. With Brian for
I'll
2 hours.
I'll be on the Joe with Panthers coverage, so I'll be at the game, so I won't see you.
Yeah,
but I will talk to you guys on the radio.
Yeah, we will. And I think I'll reconvene with you on Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Correct.
Be good times, man. Uh-huh. Everyone, stay good. Enjoy your night. We'll talk to you again next time here on 790 The Ticket.